From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, welcome everyone. It's been a while since we've had our next guest on, our first guest. She was a regular here for a while when we were talking Casey Anthony, but Casey Anthony is doing macrame somewhere now, and I don't know, is she doing macrame?
No, she's donning disguises and donning subpoenas, I believe.
You know,
or guarding from subpoenas.
You know, they have this Dancing with the Stars thing. What I would like to see is a Dancing with the
convicts?
Dancing with the convicts. Yeah, we could call it that.
Well, I think it would probably be awkward because don't they normally wear shackles?
Yeah, exactly. You know that little shuffle that they do when they have the shackles on? They could do that, call it a two-step or something. Blink from Blink on Crime, our sister blog is here, blinkoncrime.com, of course. And, you know, I'm not sure this Twitter and Tweety and Sylvester and all this stuff. You guys got to teach me that stuff. I don't know anything about
that. I will be glad to. I was kind of nervous about what your response was going to be when I said, do you tweet?
Yeah.
It was really open-ended for our relationship.
I know. And if I wasn't such a professional, I would have responded. And anyway, Morgan Harrington, we've talked about this case. We've covered it. So sad. Of course, she disappeared from the John Paul Jones Arena 2 years ago, Monday, October 17th, 2000 and, you know, whatever it is.
Nine.
Yeah, I'm just, I think of when I had the folks on the show and we've talked about these cases always get to me a bit because they're so sad. Save the Next Girl, it's an interesting campaign, and I brought you on tonight to talk about that and to talk about Morgan Harrington and what's going on with the case.
Well, thank you, Dana. First of all, I appreciate you having me. This is an important week for not just for Morgan and commemorating, if that's the right word,
sure.
Her situation and her case, which, as you know, is unsolved.
Yep.
But also for her parents who, you know, miraculously, not for them, but in the context of what we sometimes see in cases like this, have been nothing but productive in their advocacy and their quest to seek justice in Morgan's rape and murder.
Yep.
And the newest, example of that would be the Save the Next Girl campaign that they are launched. Well, they have launched. And that is basically a campaign. It's a Facebook, it's a website, it is a YouTube video to bring awareness to the fact that there is a sketch of the likely suspect. Well, he is a suspect. Police aren't saying that, but there is a DNA link,
sure,
to this individual who, through the murder of Morgan Harrington, and also to a 2005 unsolved rape and assault in Fairfax, Virginia, just about 90 minutes from Charlottesville, where Morgan went missing and was ultimately found murdered. And the reason for that is because, and they've always maintained this, that while there is not an arrest in Morgan's case, there is an individual out there. He's an African-American man in the neighborhood of age of 25 to 35, just about 6 feet tall, who they have a sketch of, who is connected to both cases. And while there's no arrest, there are women who are potential victims.
Yeah, for sure. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. We're talking about the Morgan Harrington case. Having Dan and Jill Harrington on the program here not that long ago, and others, other family members of missing or deceased loved ones, it always amazes me, Blink, to see the strength, and you talked about it, the good that comes out of evil, for lack of a better term. Let's get more into the campaign itself. What is Save the Next Girl?
Well, it's a mantra, if you will, of as I said, bringing awareness. They are not only are they going to the campaign itself is going to be launched on the web. It's going to be, you know, seen by college women all over the country. There is video, and the video basically demonstrates, it memorializes Morgan, of course,
sure.
and her youth and her innocence, and then kind of walks into the staunch reality, which is, you know, they say, spit out the sketch, spit out Morgan's killer. You know, he's pictured on an air sickness bag, his likeness. So it is reality at its most raw, and it's designed for a reason, because it is, you know, kind of an in-your-face message. And it's also a call to action to anyone that might recognize Sketch, because, you know, the reality is this. Somebody knows who this is.
Sure, yep.
There is no doubt in my mind there's probably a handful of people, at least, that know who this is. We know from a profile perspective that an individual that is likely a sexual sadist that attacks a woman and performs a sexual assault, nearly kills her in 2005, does not offend for 5 years.
No, that's...
Until he catches up with Morgan Harrington. So there are likely other victims, and that's the other angle, and that's the other goal that the Harringtons had. It was not just to warn young women and potential victims. When I say young women, I'm making an assumption it could be, you know, range of ages, but, you know, women, reminding women to be vigilant, but also a call to action for anybody who might know the suspect, to anybody that, you know, God forbid, we know 84% of sexual assaults against women in this country, a staggering 84% go unreported.
That's crazy. And let's talk about that a little bit. Blink from Blink on Crime, our sister blog, is here. Check out the blog at blinkoncrime.com. Let's talk about that stat. I've talked about it for years, and again, it is staggering. Why? Is it re-victimization?
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because it's a stigma. Well, first of all, women don't understand the law as it relates to this, and you know, I can't say that I blame anybody that's been through such a traumatic experience, and the fear that is. I mean, it's such a very personal assault. It's not, you know, a smash and grab. It's not somebody grabbing your purse. It's such an affront to a victim, and there's a stigma. And I saw this even in, you know, Morgan's case. I can recall, and I guess I'm jumping ahead a little bit to the preview of some of what we're going to cover
sure.
in the investigative piece, but I can remember in the beginning of Morgan's case, as insiders were talking, they were attacking her behavior.
Right.
They were attacking her dress. This child, this 20-year-old girl had on tights, boots, a short-sleeved shirt, tights under her miniskirt. It really, it's not necessarily a miniskirt if you have tights on underneath it.
Right.
And was buttoned up, was the picture of, you know, class. I've seen probably close to 400, at least 400 pictures of this girl, and not a single one of them was, you know, risque or suggestive in any way. This was a young girl that was a victim, and I think that there is a stigma associated with that, and I saw it in a case where she couldn't have been more of a victim. She couldn't have been more vulnerable, and yet there were still people that were assessing her behavior and how it may or may not have caused such a disgusting and horrific incident, and that is a problem.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, young girl goes to a rock concert, and we talk about the safety aspect. In fact, my next guest, Clint, as you know, and I covered this story together as far as how to protect young gals when they go to this, because there's that, some people don't like me using this term, but the predators are circling around out there, the sharks in the water that are going in the circle. But you can't blame, and I use that term re-victimization. I don't know if I like it or not, but it is true, and that's why we have these crazy stats.
It is very true, and you hit the nail on the head. And I know Clint. I've heard Clint speak about this before. I'm a big fan of Clint in that regard, and he as yours as well. And that's exactly true. There's one way that you can best protect, and when you, as the word you use, predator, that's exactly what we're dealing with here. Morgan's situation became obvious to somebody within earshot of her.
Yep.
And it was taken advantage of. In the investigative piece, we're going to talk about some of the discrepancies that are in play investigatively, but on the surface, you bring up such a valid and important point, and that is security. And the biggest error, and if nobody does anything else, I just want them to know you never, ever, ever, ever leave the buddy system.
Exactly.
If you eliminate the opportunity for the crime, because this person is looking for somebody by themselves. They are looking for a low-risk scenario. They want it on their terms. They want it in a way that they are most likely not to get caught. This is an organized, opportunistic sexual sadist. So while I do believe that ultimately the fact that he encountered Morgan where he did is going to be his undoing, I also believe that this is a person that has the skill sets to make that situation happen. And when the only thing I can tell you unequivocally to best protect against that is to employ the buddy system. Morgan never should have went to the ladies' room by herself.
Right.
Morgan, had she not gone by herself, I have no doubt in my mind that she would be here today. Had she not had her friends come out of that venue, because their friend was standing outside in the rain without the ability to get back in, without any keys to her car, which was in the garage, 150 yards away, with her jacket. Had that occurred, Morgan Harrington would be here today, in my opinion.
Is there, and I've brought this up before with other guests, but is there at venues like this, sports events, rock concerts, whatever, is there more of a responsibility, my word, not yours, for the venue to have more security, to protect more, or is this something that you can't prevent? The old story of swarm the area with a bunch of cops, you're going to prevent something from happening. Not totally not true, but, I don't know.
Well, the first thing I would say is, it is both our words. Yes, there is a responsibility. That venue sits 15,000 people. Just if we look at, the fact that it's connected to a federally funded institution, and it's connected to either subsidies or parents that are paying tuitions, having it all be connected, it's all under that same umbrella because it supports the sports programs, it supports several things within that, university. Absolutely. Somebody's going to need to explain at some point how a 15,000-seat venue cannot produce an image of a 20-year-old girl who ends up going missing. It has a $10 million security system in it.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
I agree. And it's been, talked to death, and I'm not trying to be facetious or rude, but it's crazy. With today's security, with everything that's going on, and the capabilities with the technology, it should happen. Blink from Blink on Crimes here. Make sure and check out blinkoncrime.com. In fact, there's going to be more on this story. Morgan Harrington, the Morgan Harrington murder, two women, two locations, 2 years too long. So true. When it's either Drew Kesey or Joyce Kesey or the Harringtons or, Natalie Holloway's folks, or I could go on and on and on and on and on, there always seems to fall back on the investigation itself, whether it's a small community where the police just aren't trained for something like this, whether it's the Italians. Clint and I are going to talk Amanda Knox here in about 15 minutes. And believe me, he's going to say some things that are going to get some people wound up tonight. Whether it's the big city, whether it's the whatever, do the cops deserve some praise or some criticism? I got to be careful with my words here.
They deserve both. Yep. In this case, we are looking at multiple agencies, and as a matter of fact, you bring up again an excellent point. This university has its own police department.
Right.
And they were running this case in the first 48 hours, if you will. And Jill Harrington, along with another parent and family, is lobbying right now to change the law in Virginia whereby a missing persons case would immediately go to either the Charlottesville Police Department, where they are better trained, or to, you know, the state police. My personal opinion, having worked on these cases with several different levels of agency, is that the only way to combat the problem that you have with an under-trained, under-resourced, and I'd like to emphasize, it's not so much the training, although that's a part of it.
Right.
It's the resources available to them in an immediate way. These folks need to ramp up in an emergency situation when you have somebody that's missing. You cannot say, and this happened in Morgan's case. I literally rewatched the Investigation Discovery Disappeared episode again to prep last night. And in that, Dino Capuzzo, who is one of the lead investigators in Morgan's case, said, you know, there was no evidence of foul play for the first 48 hours. And again, I'm shocked at that reaction, because if my pocketbook with my identification is found in a field and my cell phone is found 35 yards away without a battery in it, I'm thinking that's foul play potentially.
Absolutely.
And therefore, I don't want to hear, well, we weren't sure, or we didn't know if there was foul play, she just up and left. This is an individual without a source of funds, without their identity, without their cell phone, without their way of communicating to somebody else. Then you have to look to the victimology of this person. Is this atypical behavior? Well, of course it is. So that's, to me, you have the presumption, you have the burden of the presumption of foul play. And that didn't happen in this case. And then what happened is it went from the University of Virginia Police to the Charlottesville Police, investigated some other things. And then around within 72 hours, it was handled by the Virginia State Police. But as much as I want to be a proponent, and you know that I am, Dana,
yep,
if 2 years down the road where you've got a case where you've got a DNA profile, make that two, by the way.
Yep.
There's one in the Fairfax case from a different origin of sample, and there's one in this case, and you've got eyewitnesses in both, because let's assume this guy didn't, you know, fly out of the sky, you know, with a spaceship and suck her up off of the, you know, the bridge or what have you. Somebody had to have been within visual notification and or earshot of this guy, and you've got evidence from both crime scenes, and you have recovered Morgan in a 700-acre farm where this is probably the one area that is inaccessible by anything other than an ATV, and unequivocally would never be traversed or accessed at night by somebody that isn't intimately familiar with this farm. You put all that together, if after 2 years you don't have a suspect, and they'll tell you they don't, they're going to be making an announcement on Monday the 17th that they have no new information to add. If you don't have that, something you're doing is not working, and you need to do something else.
Yep. Yeah. Look at Plan B. Blink from Link on Crime Show. We're talking about Save the Next Girl and, of course, the Morgan Harrington case. What should we expect? We've got about 4 minutes left with part two of this story.
Well, we're going to talk about the case. We're going to talk about a lot. We're going to talk about the individual investigative work of the agencies. We're going to talk about some inside source information. And one of the things that nobody's going to want to talk about, and I know this because it's been shut down just about every time we talk about it, is we've done our own investigation into the possibility that this could be an enemy from within. And when I say that, I'm talking about, I'm uncomfortable with some of the analysis and investigation we've done with regard to UVA employees and contract employees, their criminal backgrounds, and the access that they've got on site. We have an issue, because I can tell you unequivocally, and I'm not going to be naming names, obviously that would be inappropriate, but from our investigation, we've got folks that have been arrested for felony drug conviction, for felony drug charges, have prior background with drug offenses, that are employees, that have access to the venue, that have access to the grounds, and horribly, they have access to our kids.
Oh, jeez. Well, I'll tell you, folks, you gotta stay tuned to blinkoncrime.com. I got to get your thoughts on Amanda Knox before I let you go. You know, I'm going to date myself.
Manini sleeps in a coffin.
Yeah.
In his basement. I have, you know, I'm not being glib, because Meredith Kircher was brutally murdered.
Yeah.
And we can't forget the injustice that has really befallen that, that girl.
True.
But there was not, and I've read, you know, I've read the report, the, I think it's 309, the Maasai report, that's 397 pages front to back, not the abridged version. I'm clueless as to everything I've read and every objection to supporters that believe that Amanda Knox and Solicito?
Easy for you to say.
Raffaello, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That they, you know, they were guilty, these folks. There was not one, there was not a shred of circumstantial or physical evidence in Meredith Kircher's room. And that led to either one. And not only that, the arguments from those supporters aren't even valid. I've read several that said that Meredith Kircher did not have defensive rooms. That's just not accurate.
Yeah.
I've read that, you know, she could not have been killed by one person. She had to have been restrained because of the wounding of her neck. Guess what? If you read the report, it specifically states she was likely asphyxiated to being unconscious prior to those wounds. It really is all there.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, Dana, it's another one of these cases where, first of all, you know, the monster from Florence is this same prosecutor. And they don't have a successful conclusion to that case, that serial killer case. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
Sure, yeah.
But, again, you have this guy who, you know, who says he sees evil in people's eyes, and this was some sort of satanic ritual. If it was some sort of satanic ritual involving all three of them, why isn't there any evidence to implicate his theory? This is very simply a theory created to convict people that should not have been convicted and would not have been convicted in this country.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Blink from Blink on Crime, always a pleasure. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Take care, Dana.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's Blink from Blink on Crime, our sister blogger, the digital blog goddess of all things crime. Make sure and tune into her blog site to find out more about Morgan Harrington. A story we'll continue covering here. We're going to return in a minute with Clint Van Zandt. You know him as a retired FBI agent, criminal profiler, security expert, author. His webpage, livesecure.org, gives you all the tips on how to keep yourself and your loved ones safe. And we'll be talking to Clint about this California shooting that happened just today, 8 dead, 1 injured, another spree shooting, if you want to call it that. And then we'll get into Foxy Noxy with Clint. So we'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Okay, we're back. Clint Van Zandt's here. You all know him as a retired FBI agent, security expert, profiler, author, and always a big kick to have him on the show. Hi, Clint. How are you?
Hey, good evening. Good to be with you.
Haven't had you on for a while. I want to start real quick, and I didn't prep you with this, about this California shooting at a hair salon. Quick thoughts on that.
Well, I caught the early part of it. Unfortunately, it's not uncommon that we see, it's my initial understanding it was a domestic dispute that the shooter went in to find his ex-wife, and when he started firing away, he just shot at everyone. And yet he's wearing body armor, carrying multiple weapons, and gives up. And of course, psychologically, the reason was that he was angry, frustrated, murderous as far as his ex-wife, and once he carried that off, unlike a lot of people who commit a true act of violence in a workplace, even though that's where it happened, he accomplished what he wanted to. He punished her for whatever reason he felt, you know, he had the right to do it, and obviously no one has the right to do something like that. But again, it's, you know, it and I'll anger the National Rifle Association for the 100th time, but you look at, you know, American society, we've got 308 million Americans, 285 million guns, and there is just people turn to guns as a method of conflict resolution instead of doing it with their voice or through the courts. They turn to weapons, and that is obviously the final resolution that he was able to carry out. It's sad, but again, there's going to be one more person sitting on the edge of the psychological abyss in America who sees that happen. They're going to file that away in their mind, and when they reach that point, they'll say, aha, I know what to do. I remember what that guy did in a beauty salon, and we'll see another one like this. It's sad, but it's not going to go away. And until we do something, number one, about guns, and until, number two, we start working with children in grade school and help them find acceptable forms of conflict resolution and not the murder and mayhem that they see on television and the movies, there are some people who are always going to turn to that.
Conflict resolution, so true. I brought you on to talk about Amanda Knox. You and I have talked about this many times on the program.
Yeah.
You were there. You were at the crime scene. Are you surprised?
No. Number one, I know she's America's sweetheart, and yeah. I've also read articles recently that said, you know, she was too, quote-unquote, too pretty to be in jail, unquote.
Oh, geez.
Part of me wishes I didn't know what that means, but yeah. Unfortunately I do. What I had said early on in this case is, as you indicated, I was there. I was at the crime scene. I saw the evidence of Meredith Kircher's murder. I saw the crime scene photographs. I went to the CSI lab. They talked to me about the physical evidence they had. I talked to the prosecutor. I talked to the investigators. And at the time, they felt pretty good about the case they had and pretty good about the motive, drugs and robbery, that they thought brought this about. But as this case progressed, I remember doing an interview with Amanda's hometown newspaper on the West Coast, and they asked what was going to happen. And I said, unfortunately, not number one, because of the evidence the prosecution believes it has, and number two, I think Amanda and some of the lies, the stories she said, painted herself in a corner. But as important that her supporters in the United States and those on the West Coast and those that would call me and write me on an almost daily basis and challenge any theory that I had, they were so intent of wanting her to be innocent, of that they were going to almost make it happen that way. And they were trashing the Italian criminal justice system and trashing Italy and almost making light and a joke of it. And I remember telling a reporter at the time that even if there is not enough evidence that would have convicted her in a court in America, number one, I think they probably believe they have that in Italy, and number two, I think she'll be convicted in the court of public opinion
yeah.
because of what her supporters and everyone has said about Italy and about the criminal justice system. She'll languish in jail for a couple of years, and then she'll be released on appeal just to get rid of the hue and cry. The Italians would get their pound of flesh. They'll lock her up for a couple of years. They'll make America happy and turn her loose. And that's what we'll have. But Dana, you and I, we've been in the criminal justice system for years, and you and I have, you know, we've seen probably guilty people walk, and I'm sure there are innocent people who go to jail. The DNA Innocence Project in America has released over 200 people who were falsely convicted on some type of evidence where the DNA said otherwise. So, the criminal justice system has had its way. It's reversed a conviction. If we believe in that system in the world, we have to say that's the way it goes. And those that want to make analogies between Amanda and Casey Anthony and O.J. Simpson and others, I mean, they can make those analogies. Some may well believe that she got away with murder, but unfortunately, a lot of people get away with murder, and there are a segment of people who get charged falsely with a crime. We know that there are at least two or three people who know what really happened there. Rudy Grudy, the Ivory Coast drug dealer who already confessed, Amanda's boyfriend and Amanda. And they know, and like, you know, many people, they will carry to their grave in their mind what actually happened. You and I may never know, but they know, and that's yeah. something they have to carry. And some people, if they're innocent, of course, they're glad to be out, and others, if they're guilty and get away with something, down deep in the crevices of their mind, they have to look in that mirror every morning and say, there's the killer. And I don't know which it is. And unlike her parents and unlike a former FBI agent I've heard on the West Coast, they stand up and say, she's innocent, she's 100% innocent, I know. Well, Dana, I don't know either way. You know,
yeah.
I've seen the crime scene, I've seen the evidence. I think her behavior was highly suggestive. Statements she made, lies she told, was highly suggestive of someone who was involved in this. But again, the courts have ruled against the physical evidence, and she's back with her parents and with her family. And as a parent of three adult children myself, I know I would be happy with my own child's homecoming.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt is here. Let's talk about the public perception a little bit. You mentioned Casey Anthony and others, Amanda Knox. I'm sure the bidding wars are starting to are out there to try and interview her. The movies will be, the scripts will be written and all of that. Are we forgetting about the victims? I know what your answer will be, and focusing on the pretty brunette that some will say was innocent all along?
Yeah, you know, when you look at, you know, the woman who was killed, Meredith Kircher, and Dana, this was a brutal, savage murder. I mean, inside the apartment, not only was she attacked, was she sexually assaulted, was her throat cut, but I saw the walls of the apartment where this woman who had her clothes stripped off of her, sexually assaulted, cut with what some say initially were two different knives, perhaps suggesting two different assailants. You could see the handprints on the wall where here this woman, her throat's cut, she's choking on her own blood, and she's trying to pull herself up on the wall, trying to get help, and there was no help. There was no one to do anything for her. And when you see her parents and her family members, I mean, they're not, you know, they're not outgoing, seek the public, get in front of the camera like Amanda Knox's parents are. They're very quiet. They believed that the court was correct in the first finding all three that were charged as guilty, or one confessed and two were found guilty. The family believed the criminal justice system was correct. They thought there was some aspect of justice for their daughter. And now, even though Amanda Knox's parents and family are celebrating and giving each other high fives, what people forget are the mother, the father, the brother or sister who have to look at each other across a dinner table at night and have to say, while those Americans are celebrating and having a good time, if they believe Amanda Knox had anything to do with it, they've seen her gone free. They've seen her back home again, and they buried their daughter. They buried their daughter who was a victim of a horribly brutal crime. Now, if the drug dealer, Rudy, if he was the only one responsible, this is a woman who had taken karate and who really knew how to take care of herself. If he, by himself, was able to inflict all that damage and injury and brutality on this woman, then the right guy is in jail. If the other two had something to do with it, they're out. And we'll just hope that, you know, if they've got a chance now, if they've been released and had anything to do with it, I like to hope these two people will at least turn around their lives and will at least do something positive. And in Amanda Knox's case, as you suggest, I mean, there's going to be book deals and movie deals and speaking tours that she's going to do. And all of a sudden, if you believe she was somehow responsible, we're going to see her like so many anti-culture type of people in America who we take criminals and we elevate them. We've got the Ted Bundys of the world, and we've got the individuals who have, you know, killed their girlfriends and killed their wives, and they sit in jail and they get love letters from someone else. I mean, it's frustrating when you see someone who you know is responsible for a crime make money out of it. In Amanda Knox's case, if she's innocent, maybe she has a right to make this, but you hate to see anyone get any notoriety out of it when, again, Meredith Kircher is dead and her family, the only notoriety they get is laying flowers on their daughter's grave.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt is here. Check out his webpage at livesecure.org. Let's talk about the safety aspect a little bit, Clint, or whether it's this case. And, you know, the circumstances may not be like this, but how do the young women out there today protect themselves? And I want you to talk a little bit about some of the apps that are available.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got one app that we helped originally develop that one can get on their iPhone or smartphone or others like that. It's called Silent Bodyguard that someone could get, and then I think it's a couple of bucks. I don't make any money off of it, so I don't know. But there's an app you can put on, and then you put in the names of two or three people. You put their phone numbers and their emails. And all you have to do is push one button, and it sends out an emergency message that you're in distress. And about every 30 seconds, it resends your new GPS location. So if you've been moved from point A to point B, police, law enforcement, they have a location to start where something happened to you that was activated, and they can even follow the GPS activation. So, you know, there's technology out there, but so much of it, too, is just being smart. You know, for young men and young women, and, hey, I was there at one time, although it seems like a long time ago now, well, you think you're bulletproof. You think you're never going to die. You think that I can drive a car as fast as I can, as fast as I want. I can drink. I can party. I can be out. I can be around firearms and edged weapons and strange people, and nobody can hurt me. And I think, you know, it kind of harkens back a lot of times to, like, on vacation or other places where you go together in the summertime on spring break for young men and women. It's like, you know, the movie Top Gun from years ago where Tom Cruise, the lesson he learned was you never leave your wingman. And I think that's when we see these co-eds and other people disappear, young women or men disappear from bars, they've left out of college, or they're working and they've gone out on their own. Time and again, it's because either these young men or young women have exposed themselves, they've drank too much, they've done drugs, and they travel by themselves. They don't have someone else who they're responsible to and who's responsible for them. And there are some very simple things people can do when they're out and about in society just to we're told, you know, to be your brother and your sister's keeper. I think if we would adopt that more and we take more of a responsibility, we wouldn't see situations like we saw, you know, in Aruba.
Yeah.
When Natalie Holloway disappeared, and in her case, she went off without her friends, told them no, supposedly, and, you know, the rest was history on that. So I think, you know, all of us, we have a responsibility to stand up with our friends in various situations, and if they're too drunk or they're too stupid to understand, maybe we have to punch through that just to be with them and save them. And, you know, that's everybody's choice, but I just can imagine still today, for example, the friends of Natalie Holloway, who allowed her to drive away in that car with what some believe were people responsible for her death. And to this day, years and years later, I'm sure in their minds they have to think, only if I would have said something, I would have done something. But what we all know in life is that there are no take-backs. You can't take back an action that you did, and sometimes it doesn't mean a thing, and sometimes it means the life, if not your own, someone else's.
Absolutely. Well said. LiveSecure.org. Clint Van Sant, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Clint's Van Zandt, his take on Amanda Knox. We're going to have to end the show a little bit early tonight. I hope you don't mind, but I will remind you that we are at scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up the show live. You can listen to podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, leave comments, whatever you like. Of course, scaredmonkeys.com is the creme de la creme of what we do here. And don't forget our sister blogger, Blink from blinkoncrime.com. And stay tuned there for more information coming up very soon on Morgan Harrington. That's it. That's tonight's show. We'll see you Tuesday next week, Tuesday the 18th, with more coverage of the Conrad Murray case. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you again real soon on the Dana Pretzer Show.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.